Today's program is brought to you by Regional Access. Regional Access is a regional distributor committed to creating sustainable economies throughout the Northeast. For more information, visit regionalaccess.net.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Of the morning after. I'm your host today, Sari Kamen. Jesse Kiefer is a memory of good feelings and warmth to me today, but she is not here in the studio. I miss her very much. I do have, however, my colleague Amanda Cargill hosting with me today. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Sari. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. She is the food content director of... Why don't you explain what you do? I keep messing it up.
I am the food content director for Latina Media Ventures, and they are the brand behind Latina Magazine, and then the standalone food property, thelatinkitchen.com, which is sort of culinary, wine, travel, all things Latin food and drink related.
Fantastic. We're not talking about anything Latin today.
Completely off limits. I have nothing to say then.
Although we've brought a Latin expert in, we're not going to be talking about anything Latin. Although we are going to start the show by talking about a certain event that's been in the news, and it's cheese, which I guess
is Latin.
It could be Latin, but in this case, it's just not. Although okay. This particular cheese is Velveeta, which... Although it's known for queso, mm-hmm. Have you ever had Velveeta queso?
I can't say that I have, unfortunately or fortunately.
Yeah, I have no comment on that as well. But so recently I read in the news that there is a shortage of Velveeta cheese. And as many of you know or don't know, all of you millions of listeners out there, not only do I co-host The Morning After with the esteemed Jesse Kiefer, I also work at Heritage Radio Network, and I write for the news. So those of you who have been to the website to listen to our shows, we also have a whole content page of all sorts of different topics, ranging from business and pleasure and health and all that. And I'm often the person behind creating those pieces. So I did one about the Velveeta shortage. And before we really, you know, dip into it.
Ba-dum-bum.
Evan, I think you have one that piece I made on this shortage of Velveeta. Do you mind playing that for us?
Brought to you by the International Culinary Center, culinarycenter.com, heritageradionetwork.org.
Business. With only 3 weeks left until the Super Bowl, Kraft Foods has announced a shortage of their famous pasteurized prepared cheese product, Velveeta. Before you have a total meltdown, let's review the facts. The cheese apocalypse, as Kraft is calling it, is due to so-called minor manufacturing challenges. The shortage, which is only affecting certain parts of the country, is being tracked by a map in real time on the website cheesepocalypse.org. According to the map, the hardest hit areas are parts of Nebraska and Kansas, and the eastern seaboard, including New York City. This queso quandary is being amplified by tweets from Velveeta that pose questions such as, will #cheesepocalypse tear our great nation apart? Or unite us in our love of liquid gold? Let's take a minute to look back at the evolution of this cheesy spread. Velveeta was invented in 1918 by Swiss cheesemonger Emil Frey. Frey was attempting to find a use for leftover scraps of cheese and discovered that by adding whey, he had created a meltable product he dubbed Velveeta, named for its velvety texture. It was originally marketed as a health food because of the carbohydrates and minerals found in whey. These days, Velveeta is better known as the key ingredient in a popular dip known as queso. Like chicken wings, potato skins, and other calorie-heavy snacks, queso is a staple at Super Bowl parties across the country. The cheese apocalypse is now, and skeptics are wondering if it might be a marketing ploy developed by Kraft. In the wake of the almost collapse of Sriracha and Twinkies, many who have voiced their opinions on Twitter are convinced that Velveeta is claiming a shortage in hopes that consumers will run to the stores and purchase as much Velveeta as possible. Velveeta seems to be playing up the perils of the shortage, stating on their website that, quote, the current cheesepocalypse is a difficult time for our great nation, end quote. Velveeta is adamant that the shortage is in no way a publicity stunt, but the sticky story is still a little hard to swallow. I'm Sarah Kamen for HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting
all right.
30 live shows.
So, despite all the puns that I inserted there, I hope that you guys kind of got the gist. So basically, there's this so-called shortage, and I think Velveeta is the one that announced it. So in addition to claiming there's a shortage, they've created a website called cheesepocalypse.org. And first of all, I want to know how they got the ORG. I mean, that's crazy. So it should be like a 501c or something. And they have this live map on their website that is tracking where the shortages is happening in real time, according to people's tweets. And then they're also tweeting things like, will the cheesepocalypse tear our great nation apart? And they're calling it liquid gold, and they're kind of like Fox Newsing it.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, just based on the story, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, and I think there's a couple things going on here. They are denying that, you know, it's not actually happening. But the truth is that it's sort of a silly campaign that they're rendering. I mean, just the simple cheesepocalypse, using terminology like hardest hit areas. I mean, it has to be tongue in cheek or else.
Well,
you
it's a little bit hyperbolic.
That. Yeah, just a bit.
Yeah, just a bit. I don't know that other people refer to Velveeta as liquid gold other than Velveeta itself.
I think you might be right.
I mean, it's certainly not worth its weight in gold. Yeah, so it's almost like they're kind of capitalizing on, you know, recent almost shutdowns. You know, we know Sriracha was in the news lately because their factory almost got shut down and people went like, oh my God, I have to buy all the Sriracha in the world.
Yeah, it's fear-mongering for sure.
It's fear-mongering and Twinkies. So I tried to get to the bottom of it and I called Velveeta. Well, I called Kraft. I called customer service at Kraft and a very nice young man, I don't know if he was young, he answered the phone and I said, you know, is there really a Velveeta shortage happening? And he had no idea what I was talking about. So
human resources really needs to start spreading the word about some of
their
marketing campaigns.
Yeah, and so, I informed him about cheesepocalypse.org and, he told me that there was no shortage. So apparently representatives from Kraft aren't aware of the shortage, which makes me think that, you know, maybe there's no shortage.
Yeah, I think you have to consider the source, and they're the source.
Yeah, they're the source.
The people who stand to gain the most.
Yeah, and they did call me back, and they gave me a media representative's phone number, and I didn't actually have time to follow up on it, but I don't know. I smell some funky cheese in the house. That's all I'm going to say.
You're just full of the puns today.
I mean,
you can't help yourself.
I don't know. I think it was our vegan breakfast that we ate, Amanda.
A fantastic vegan
breakfast.
Yeah,
it really charged me up.
Yeah, I think I...
We ate vegan biscuits.
I think I might be converted now.
No,
at least for the rest of the day.
At least until you're next hungry.
But I do want to get back to Velveeta and say a couple of things about this. Number
Please.
One, I think it's a pretty brilliant marketing campaign.
Sure.
I mean, if you think about it, it's cute. And it's not offending anyone.
I'm offended.
I mean...
Actually, Jack Inslee is offended. Our executive producer is very offended.
Really?
He thinks that it's completely cynical and, you know, it's just not... There's no transparency involved and it's misleading to customers and that's not okay.
I guess I'm of the mind that are people really going to... Like, are there going to be riots breaking out in the grocery store?
I think that's what they want to happen.
Right, because I guess for me, being a non-Velveeta queso eater,
right.
I can't imagine that situation arising.
I can't imagine either, but, you know, the Super Bowl...
True.
...is happening.
It's a good
soon.
Point, but...
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I just want to say real quickly that, you know, before we get into the rest, that we are doing an interview today with Jordan Lexton, and I just want to see if she's on air. Are you there, Jordan?
I am.
Hi. Good. Yeah.
How's
and I
going?
Want you to get in the conversation. I haven't.
Okay, good. I wasn't sure.
I wasn't sure either.
Here, but I have, you know, I was thinking about it just hearing the talk. And I have to say that regardless of what the intention is, whether it was fully intentional or accidental, this is absolutely a genius marketing tool for Kraft. And because, you know, sometimes in the realm of what the possibility in business for things to go wrong, I often hear and often say that mistakes are going to happen, but how you respond to those mistakes is really where the true genius lies.
Indeed.
So if they noticed a shortage and then decided to really turn it into this campaign right before the Super Bowl, I think that is really, really smart, or if they decided to try and create this fake shortage to get people anxious and get their Velveeta when they can, I think that also was a genius move. So we're kind of, regardless of what the impetus was for it all, it works.
Yeah, but do you think it's unethical?
You know, I think that it is, I think that it is, so many things are,
did you just beat yourself out?
When it comes to the food business, I don't think it's unethical. I think that there are so many things that are subtle and explicit, and transparency, obviously, I think a lot of the times think about, like, people wanting to be more aware of where their food is coming from, having more transparency around that, but I think in consideration of the way that they have taken it on and made it tongue-in-cheek and made it kind of this kitschy item and thing, there's an element of just play and playfulness with it that makes it fly for me.
Even though they're denying that they are the ones responsible for, you know,
spreading. A full-out denial. If they are actually, I guess a full-out denial, if they are truthfully the ones making it up, then I would get into a bit of, I might call foul there.
Yeah.
But keeping it vague seems okay for me.
I agree with you, Jordan. Hi, it's Amanda here. I think it's a sticky, ha-ha, running with Sari's lead of the puns. I think it's an interesting situation, though, because, you know, if they admit it, then it kind of loses its fun. And,
right,
you know, there are so many sort of food crises to actually get concerned about.
That's right.
That this one, I think, is kind of fun and it's silly. And as I said, I don't think anybody, I mean, what is Velveeta made of? Where? How does this shortage happen? Is it on the manufacturing side?
Yes. According to them, it's on the manufacturing side.
Yeah. And also, what is marketing without some manipulation?
Okay. So Jordan, I want to introduce you because now you're like you're talking and no one knows who you are except, well, everyone who knows who you are. Jordan is the founder of an unbelievable organization called Drive Change, drivechange.org. It's a food truck business. She started this after working at Rikers, the prison, with underage prisoners, but I guess you can explain this better, Jordan. Young prisoners.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and explain what it is? Although
You're doing great. But no, it's a food truck social enterprise where we are building and operating state-of-the-art locally sourced food trucks that hire and train formerly incarcerated young people. And we are working with we're working with 16 to 25-year-olds, but I was working with adolescents on Rikers Island, ages 16 through 18, but this young population is actually deemed criminal adults in New York State, and New York is actually one of two states that automatically treats kids as young as 16 as adults. So that's where working with this population started getting me thinking about the needs for reentry and support and access to opportunity after release, and I have been a food lover for my entire life, so the fit was really perfect.
Great. So that's who Jordan is. We're gonna get into that in just a minute, but I wanted to keep including you in our chatter here before we get into Drive Change in depth. There's a couple other things we wanted to touch upon that are, you know, sort of current in the news that Amanda and I have been talking about. So, first of all, Jordan, are you aware of what happened at Alinea, which is Grant Achatz's restaurant in Chicago, where recently he had some people in the restaurant who brought their baby, and the baby proceeded to scream through the entire meal. And for those of you who don't know, Alinea, it's a 3-star Michelin-starred restaurant. It's one of the best restaurants in the nation, if not the world. It's all, you know, prefix. It's very kind of heavy into molecular gastronomy. It's not kid-friendly. So Chef Grant tweeted that he was in a bit of a bind or a dilemma, you know, whether or not to let kids in the restaurant because other customers were, you know, they were disturbed and they were paying thousands of dollars probably to be there. So Grant just took it upon himself to kind of like let the nation know that he was in a bit of a situation of whether or not, you know, if you're paying enough to be here, you should be allowed to bring your kid, or, you know, other people are paying to be here, they shouldn't have to be disturbed by your kid. So I don't know if you were aware that happened this week. What did you think of that?
I wasn't aware of it. But, you know, I think it's interesting. I do think that there has to be great consideration for the kind of experience that people have and also are expecting if they are paying a considerable amount of money to be able to have this experience. And certainly I think it would maybe apply just a utilitarian approach to that, that if more people are disturbed than are really benefiting from the ability of bringing their children, I would say that having some kind of rule that didn't allow young people below a certain age might be an acceptable approach.
Yeah.
You are much more diplomatic than I am.
Also not a parent. Okay. I don't know if that...
Nope. None of us are parents.
None of us are parents, so unfortunately we don't have that. I do have godsons, if that counts.
Nope.
Doesn't count. Okay. But I also think that Grant was very diplomatic as well. He was very kind in his tweet. It wasn't completely accusational. Mm-hmm. That said, my feeling is you have two options if you want to dine out with your children. One, Chuck E. Cheese. Two, New Jersey or Long Island. And now all the parents are going to put a hit out on me. But really, you know, and I actually think my friends with kids would agree.
Well, what if it, you know, I'm sure to get a reservation at Alinea is probably months of planning.
Precisely.
What if they had a babysitter who canceled the last minute? I mean, it's such a coveted reservation.
Unfortunately, that's the choice that you make when you have children.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that said, the converse of that is, you know, I'm not rich. If this might be my one night out of every month or out of every year
totally.
Where I'm treating myself.
Totally.
And personally, yeah. I don't, you know, if I want screaming kids, I'll go to one of my friend's house who has screaming kids.
Yeah.
This is a place for adults, and children can learn tableside manners at other locations. And then when they're ready and they're of an age where they don't throw tantrums, I think, you know, that's the time to bring them out and teach them to put their napkin in their lap.
I kind of think, you know, for me, the bar is like, if the restaurant doesn't have any food that's explicitly for children, then children don't belong there. Good and a lot of restaurants, a lot of high-end restaurants do accommodate children, but that's not mm-hmm. one of them. And if I was paying whatever amount that it costs to go there, I certainly wouldn't want to hear a screaming kid with my
It reminds me of food. A great Sex and the City episode, which I won't go into, but yeah, huge dialogue about kids, and one of the characters gets spaghetti thrown on her. And I think that the four main characters were all in agreement. No kids.
Okay. So that's good. And I also just wanted to say that, you know, Jesse, my co-host, who's not here today, we talk a lot about food heists and thefts. And so I read something today, and Jesse, this is for you. I read today that police in Rome were able to round up and, I guess, arrest a group of thieves in Rome who have been called, they've been dubbed the Mustard Gang. They haven't been stealing mustard per se, but they've been stealing a lot of money. And the way that they, con people, I guess, is they throw mustard at them. And then while the unlucky recipients are, you know, dealing with, you know, being covered with mustard, like one of the other thieves comes in and jacks their wallets. And I guess these people, this Mustard Gang, have gotten away with almost $100,000, and it's mostly in the airport or, you know, tourists just coming in. So I'm happy to report that the Mustard Gang is no longer on the streets of Rome, and those of us traveling there. Well, I guess what I want to say, if you have someone throwing mustard at you, grab your wallet, because that's just weird.
I wonder if they're throwing mustard powder.
No, mustard. Deli style.
You know, this is not food related, but I have to say I was traveling in Argentina once, and it happened to me. I was backpacking, so I had a giant backpack on. I was on the train, on the subway, and someone splashed me with a liquid, lotion, I think it was, and it got all over me, and it distracted me, and I didn't even look in my backpack until I arrived at the train station, and my wallet had been stolen.
Oh, okay.
And I was so, you know, I think I was more upset about the fact that, they got me. I mean, I'm in New York. I was like, really? But I don't think this is the first, you know, distraction technique that's been used.
Yeah. Okay, so great. Just wanted to get that off our chests. Now that we're caught up to speed, Jordan, how are you?
I'm great. I'm really great. So, it's really nice to talk to you both.
Yeah, no, you too. I mean, you and I have connected several times kind of throughout all of the stages of Drive Change. I think even before there was a food truck that existed.
Yeah.
I mean, probably over a year ago was the first time we connected.
Almost, yeah, almost.
Why don't you just bring us up to speed? You know, you gave us a little bit about your background, how you got involved in your project. I'd love to hear the evolution. And every time we talk, it's so great because you're in another stage. And I know the truck has been built at this point. Sure if you're on the streets or not yet. I'm excited to hear about that.
Yeah, so I'll catch you up.
Good.
So we did build out our first food truck, which is called Snow Day. And Snow Day is going to launch on the New York City streets in the next 2 to 3 weeks. So we're very excited. We were able to negotiate a new kind of permit through the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, which is really exciting for us, due in large part to the nature of our program. So we actually have a flexible restricted area permit, which allows us to be in any private lot that we can in private or private property that we can negotiate. In the past, restricted area permits are really only for one designated location, but we've been able to really go in there and talk about the shared value of having this program exist for both the food truck market, mobile vending market, for the Department of Health, and also for the ability to hire challenging to employ populations such as formerly incarcerated youth. And so we've now been in the stage of negotiating these private relationships, and happy to say that we've been really, like, other businesses and other lot owners have been so receptive to working with us. So we now have we have four locations that we know we're going to be after the second week of February, and we're negotiating a few more. But we are really, really excited, and we're going to be in the World Trade Center. We're going to be in the Dumbo lot. We're going to be up in Harlem in a lot near La Marqueta. And we're also negotiating a position in Gowanus and a position in Chelsea as well.
Awesome.
Wow. Great locations. Great program.
Yeah. You know, Jordan, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back with you to keep it going.
To interrogate you.
Thanks so much.
Okay. We'll be right back with Jordan Lexton.
You are listening to Bang Bang Sun by Iggy Dean on heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Regional Access. Regional Access is a regional distributor committed to creating sustainable economies throughout the Northeast. This community-oriented company was built on a vision of providing ecologically responsible and ethically produced food to area consumers. During a typical week at the Regional Access warehouse, they help move thousands of pounds of natural and grass-fed meat, gallons of farm-fresh dairy, and tons of organic and specialty foods from producer to market. Having been in the distribution business for almost 25 years, Regional Access's experience and knowledge make them uniquely equipped to build out their region's food web. Up in the Finger Lakes, Regional Access will continue to champion the region's bounty and work toward a sustainable food system for the entire Northeast. For more information, visit regionalaccess.net.
And we're back. You're listening to The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org. I do like me some Iggy Dean, and I do like me some Drive Change. Hi, Jordan. You still with us?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. So let's pick up where we left off. You were just telling us about the amazing locations that your truck was going to be.
Yeah, and we're also still in the process of navigating some relationships. So if there are any private lot owners out there that would be interested in having our food truck, Snow Day, which is a maple syrup-themed food truck, be parked and located on their property any days of the week, then they can reach me at Jordan, J-O-R-D-Y-N, at drivechangenyc.org. That would be great.
Okay. So let me just get this straight. Your truck is going to be parked in these locations as opposed to kind of just rolling around?
Yeah. I mean, so a lot of the food trucks that you see out there have unrestricted area parking, and we have a restricted area permit, which is due to the fact that there are no longer any unrestricted permits that are licensed through the department. But we are also in a circumstance where we know that we're working with young people and actually having a more set schedule where we know exactly where we're going to be operating every single week will help with the flow of our program. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll be parked in these locations and stay there through the majority of our service will go from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
So you're just going to alternate at different locations throughout the week?
Exactly.
Okay, great. So we'll come to you.
That's what we hope. Yeah.
So I'm curious in what capacity the I don't know if they're all kids, but 16 to 18, the employees will be working. Will they be kind of manning the food truck? Will they be managerial capacity? What will they be doing exactly?
Yeah, so actually our timeline is that with the launch of Snow Day, we're going to run a soft launch for the truck. So for the first 4 to 6 months, we are going to really get our operations up and running, and we've partnered with the Dough Fund, which is an organization that works predominantly with homeless people, but also with formerly incarcerated people as well. So actually, they've recommended young people who are enrolled in their program and that we have hired to be the employees and work with us on the truck during these first 4 to 6 months in exchange for some free kitchen space in their facility. And so that will be the population of young people that we'll be working with for the first 4 to 6 weeks will really be exactly working on the truck itself, cooking positions, cashier, management. But then once we are established, we run and operate a full 8-month reentry program where we actually do the food safety and handler training. We do a mobile vendor license training, a hospitality training, and then we also allow for the young people in that reentry program to be our employees on our truck. And they take on the different shifts and different roles for a 4-month period of time. So during that time, we're actually teaching transferable skills in areas that relate to working on food trucks, like social media and marketing, money management and accounting, and culinary arts itself.
Wow.
So we're getting ready to really run the full program by this summer, and it's an 8-month reentry program.
And Jordan, I remember, you know, when we were initially talking about this, there's some mentoring that goes on as well to really get these young people. Yeah. You want to speak about that?
Yeah, so we are hoping to, in addition to our executive team, we also are in the process of fundraising so that we can hire social workers to be mentors and counselors for the young people in our program, who will, along with some of the young people that we're hiring now, be supervisors on the truck itself, but then also provide both individual and group counseling for the young people in our program. We're also developing a curriculum that we're calling Sunday Supper, which really is about us all cooking and eating together, where once a week we're going to be cooking and talking and then all eating together at a communal table. So we really do know that embedding those mentorship elements into the program and creating that holistic approach is really essential to combating recidivism, which is the likelihood that someone is going to go back to jail or prison.
Yeah, and you would know because you've worked with them in prison.
Yeah, I was a teacher on Rikers Island for 3 years and all too often saw, you know, too many of my students who were really full of potential recycling back into the system.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the truck. Who's your chef?
Great question. So right now I have two chefs. Jared Spofford, who comes to us from the Marlowe & Sons conglomerate and also works for Flying Pig Farm, which is a pig farm that's in the green market space.
Yep.
And then also Chef Roy Waterman, who himself is a formerly incarcerated person who has become an entrepreneur and developed his own catering business. So they're both working together right now to really, you know, get our inventory, make our wholesale accounts, make connections, develop the menu, but then also develop the mentorship and culinary arts program for the young people who will be enrolled.
Great. Is your menu is pretty fleshed out at this point, I would think.
Yeah, it's really exciting. So we're using maple syrup as that central linking ingredient. The menu was an inspiration, a personal inspiration that I had as a traveling in Canada, where I had sugar on snow for the first time, which is just fresh snow with hot maple syrup poured on top, which, like, the temperature combinations makes it a taffy, and it's just the most remarkable, purest item. So we actually have a snow machine on our truck that allows us to make sugar on snow.
You mean you haven't been storing it since the polar vortex?
Yeah. I was just going to say, thank goodness it's a snow machine. I mean, you can't go outside and grab a handful of New York City snow.
Maple snow, not yellow snow.
The health department likes us right now, but definitely once we start doing that. But then we wanted to really stretch, like, what people think of when they think of maple syrup, really inspired by chefs like Martin Picard and Hugh Dufour and, people who are using maple syrup with savory items as well. So mm-hmm. we're doing maple bacon Brussels sprouts, a maple pulled pork sliders, maple grilled cheese, and then also like a farro salad with a maple Dijon dressing, as well as these little pancake balls called pancake poppers that we get to stuff with either savory or sweet items. So
you changed the name.
Yeah, I changed the name. You know, it's interesting. They're known as Ebel Skeevers, which, you know, it's a bit of a tongue twister. So maybe we're catering to our consumer a bit on that one. But
nothing wrong with that. So is there any reason you picked maple as a theme other than, you know, like that sense memory you had in your childhood eating that original snow?
This is one of those things that is so cool about starting a business and recognizing that a coincidence can actually lead to such a great opportunity. So it turns out that New York is a huge maple syrup producer and provider. I actually did not know that. I'm a native New Yorker, but, you know, you think maple syrup, you instinctively think New Hampshire, Vermont, Canada. And New York just never comes to mind, but as it turns out,
New Yorkers kind of forget about the rest of the state.
But it's really amazing because we're able to work with these local maple producers to promote local brands and promote the local economy, and really get people to know in New York City that they can buy in state and have this really great quality product. And maple syrup is also a really versatile ingredient that also doesn't go bad very easily. So when it comes to trying to cut back on our food waste, it's one of the only food items where you can heat it up to, you know, boil and then cool it down and it can be reused. So that's something that when we think about being a food truck and we think about really trying to cut back on our waste, maple syrup is a great ingredient that way.
Wow. I think there's so many ways to address this. There's so many great things happening here. I love the fact that sort of you use everything that you're working with. But I know Sari banned my Latina dialogue at the top of the show. But I'm going to bring it full circle. But I think this is also one of the remarkable things as I hear about this, because Sari introduced me to this, to you, just prior to my arrival here today at the radio station. But is the fact that, you know, food trucks, really the history, I mean, I'm from California, so steeped in sort of street culture, Latin culture. I mean, they're mobile, so in and of themselves. But I think that there's a real connection here. Sometimes when you're thinking of sort of philanthropic programs, how to make the world a better place, that part is lost. And in this case, you have young kids, they connect to this street culture. You know, you look at someone like Dave Choi, for example, doing his sort of Korean-Mexican combo out in
LA.
Roy Choi, forgive me. But who really is kind of, you know, he's an artist, he's a graffiti artist, he's a musician. These kids connect to that. So,
absolutely.
You know, not only are you giving them skills, but you're also giving them something that they won't mock. And that's
absolutely. And like the trucks themselves, you know, the next one will have its own brand, its own identity, evolve hopefully out of the work we do with the young people, where their creativity can be really seen in everything we do, from our branding, from our logos, to the way that we kind of present ourselves 100%. You know, Twitter, Instagram, all these things that really are owned by young people, and I think are embodied in these food trucks, and I believe, like, give them their life and their vibrancy. Mm-hmm. You're right, directly relate to the young people that we're working with.
Yeah, amazing concept.
So how are customers who, you know, roll up to your truck and they're excited to eat some pulled pork sandwiches. How are you embedding your message of social change with the food? Or is there not, is there a disconnect, or are people who are eating the food understanding exactly, you know, where their money's going?
That's a great question, and one that we've wrestled with ourselves. So really, we know, and this comes from evaluating other business models that are similar. So all the sales from the truck are directly recycling back into our program and into our nonprofit. But we are a for-profit nonprofit hybrid. But it is really interesting and something we've thought about a lot. You know, we really think of ourselves as this quality, high-end food truck with a side of social justice. Mm-hmm. We certainly don't want to kind of berate people over the head with a message while they maybe are trying to consume and enjoy their lunch. And really, for us, the main thing is about being like that next best, coolest, greatest food truck that you just want to find again and again and again and come back to. It's our opportunity in the moment that you're having your exchange at our order line to really have such a great hospitality experience that you can't wait to come back to Snow Day. And I think that those subtle approaches are actually going to do more for changing the perception of what people have when they think of formerly incarcerated people. But we are also going to be totally transparent in the sense that, you know, if anyone asks or when we're writing about ourselves and talking about ourselves, we're 100% clear that that this is the social mission, because that is the heart of it. You know, that is the real reason at the end of the day that we are so committed to doing this. So, again, the food needs to speak for itself, and we don't necessarily need to have totally overt, you know, this pulled pork sandwich that you're eating is helping this one formerly incarcerated person. But at the same time, we are very clear that having subtly embedded in the quality of service and embedded a bit on some of our subtle packaging and our messaging, that we will be hinting at that larger social message.
That's great. Sure. Well, I'm all for transparency, unlike some other corporate organizations that I won't name right now. We're actually going to break one more time to hear from sponsors, and then we'll be back with Jordan Lexton from Drive Change.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
You're listening to Onions Milk by Iggy Dean on heritageradionetwork.org.
And you've been listening to The Morning After. We're back with Jordan Lexton from Drive Change. Hey, Jordan.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
And I've also had the lovely Amanda Cargill in the studio with me today, co-hosting, because Jesse Kiefer left me all by myself. But we're holding it down. We're doing okay.
We're managing, just barely.
So, Jordan, I've been seeing a lot of you in the news lately.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, you know, it really is. We're so grateful and so fortunate to have already had a lot of wonderful exposure and interest in what we're doing. And, you know, we just know for us that we can't wait to get out there and really be interacting with the public as well.
Yeah. You were on ABC, weren't you?
We were on MSNBC. We were on the Melissa Harris-Perry show, which was unbelievable, and she was unbelievable. It was such a great experience for us. And then we were recently on an early morning show on ABC. And the very exciting news is that we'll be in the innovation edition of Edible this spring.
Hey!
So that's really, really cool and really exciting.
That is very cool. We love our friends at Edible.
Yeah. They're amazing. Mm-hmm. They're amazing. So we're thrilled about that. And obviously being on Heritage is such a thrill for us,
well,
too.
Obviously.
So it really is. It's great. And it really, I think, is... I think it shows that, you know, this is something that the customers and consumers are interested in, is how food can also do good.
I think so. I think mm-hmm. it makes it taste that much better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The word is out. So, Jordan, tell us how we can get involved, how we can keep in touch, find out where your locations are going to be, come eat your
yes.
Brussels sprouts.
So, so you can learn more about our locations on either of our websites. One is for Drive Change, and it's drivechangenyc.org, and you can follow us at drivechangenyc on Twitter. The same goes for Snow Day, and it's snowdayfoodtruck.com and at snowdaytruck, which will both have the locations up for when we are established and out there. Come get your maple grilled cheese, come get your sugar on snow, and really it's going to be a wonderful experience to be interacting with the crowd. We also, too, are you know, working with volunteers all the time and always accepting donations to really support our program. We still have more money to raise before we can really run the full 8-month reentry program. So that's a huge thing for us, and it's a tax-exempt donation. You can do that right on our website as well. But those are really the best ways to be in touch.
Are you going to be doing another Kickstarter? I know your first one went so well.
It went great. Yeah, we actually did Indiegogo the first time around.
Sorry, yeah.
And we raised a little over $40,000, which
wow.
is unbelievable.
Oof.
Yeah, it was really great. And there are some plans. We've been really keeping a lot of content, especially throughout the whole build of the truck. And so once we also start doing the service, getting some more video content on that as well, I think would be a great way to combine some material and put it together for a crowdfunding effort for sure. But we also have the capacity to apply for foundations and grants because of our 501c3 affiliation. So that's a really exciting thing too. And we can also accept donations from food businesses as well, which helps obviously keep our costs lower so that we can have a larger amount of the proceeds be going back to the actual program.
Yeah, I'm guessing you've made friends with some maple syrup farmers.
We have. And they've been amazing and wonderful.
That's great. And you guys have a Facebook page as well?
Yep.
Okay.
We have a Facebook page, which is also Drive Change on Facebook, and Snow Day Truck as well.
Cool. And it's the second week in February that we can expect to be seeing the trucks?
That's what we're going for. Yeah,
okay.
second week of February.
That's right around the corner.
Not far away at all. We're really getting excited about it.
Good. I'm excited,
cool.
too.
We'll be there.
Good. Yeah. Get in line.
It's literally. It's just been so cool to be in touch with you and be with you on this whole trajectory and journey, and I'm so excited to finally, you know, see the truck in person and taste the maple syrup everything. And really, it's such a pleasure to always hear from you. And I really just admire you and love everything about what you're doing at Drive Change, Jordan.
Well, thank you, because it really matters so much to have this kind of support and investment. And it's been great to share all of this with you as well.
Yeah, good. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show today. It was an honor and a pleasure.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and thank you to Amanda Cargill from Latina. La. For being a wonderful standing co-host. And Jesse Kiefer, I miss you, and I will see you soon. And Dad, thanks for listening. All right. Thanks to you all.
Happy Sunday.
You'll listen to the morning
thanks
after.
Thanks so much, Sari.
Stay
okay.
warm.
Bye, Jordan.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.